Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, it's that time again, folks. The radio voice of Eastern Airlines is on the air, just as we have over the past 225 episodes. We thank you for listening in. We're the place you can come to each week to talk and listen to the wonderful men and women known as the Eastern family as they share their thoughts and memories of the best days of our lives. Our broadcasts are about Eastern years as early as 1928 until today, and with the news of the new Eastern Airlines, you've got to hear this. We hope you'll be part of our show. Bill, how about telling our listeners how they may participate tonight?
Certainly, Jim. For those listening to the broadcast on their computers, all you need to do is call us at area code 213-816-1611, and it will put you on Neil's producer's board so you can tell us what's on your mind or add to the subject being discussed. Remember, unless Neil has opened your phone connection to join the live conversation, you will need to press the number 1 on your phone's keypad to join in. For those who cannot listen on a computer, you can still hear and participate by just calling the number you just heard. Also, keep in mind that your telephone is a microphone and picks up any noises that may be in the background. So make sure you mute your phone or keep as quiet as possible during the broadcast. Just as a reminder for those wanting to listen to our show live every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, you can connect by going to www.ealradioshow.com. Or you can also connect with the show at our sponsor's website, www.repaonline.com. That's the site of the Retired Eastern Pilots Association. Let me repeat the phone number for the show again. It's area code 213-816-1611. Also, as a reminder, at the end of each show, we usually have time remaining for Eastern music or music of each of our shows. At the end of our show, we usually have time remaining for Eastern music or music we grew up with while working at Eastern. At the end of each broadcast, we will feature a different recording artist that we all will recognize. We hope you'll stick around after the sign-off music has been played for this part of the EAL radio show. Neil, who will be featured on the recordings tonight?
Well, on our last show, I forgot who we had, but tonight we will play at the end of our broadcast when you hear the goodnight music. Tonight we play, for your listening pleasure, the Big Band Era. Oh, how we remember the Big Band Era. Many of us will recognize the songs of the Greatest Generation. We hope it will bring back memories to you. Remember to stay tuned after the sign-off music, as this will be when the real music begins. Bill?
Well, Neil, how about cranking up that R2800 engine? And let's get the show rolling down the runway.
Okay, I hope some of our mechanic and pilot connoisseurs here don't hear anything irregular about this engine. We hope we've cleared the problems up, but anyway, stand back and clear.
Roll. Clear for us.
Clear.
Sounds like a horse galloping, doesn't it? Well, our last show, episode 225, we were happy to have as our guest Mark Gerber and his brother Alan. These two gentlemen made the trek up Mount Illimani in Bolivia to gather information about the crash into the mountain January 1st, 1985 of Eastern Flight 980. And answering questions about their experience was truly an eye-opener about the mishandling of our company's Flight 980. And also joining the show was Christine Negroni, who is an aviation consultant and an ABC correspondent, I think specializing in the aviation end of it, and Stacy Greer, who is the daughter of Second Officer Mark Byrd of that Flight 980. The radio show was honored by having these guests during the broadcast. It was really, like I say, an eye-opener. And continuing with last week's show, we want to discuss Flight 980 that crashed into Mount Illimani, and that the cause of the tragedy has never been determined. Many questions surround Flight 980, and some of which were addressed by the Gerber brothers, Mark and Alan, in last week's show. So hopefully you'll join us as we continue to explore this appalling cover-up and subsequent scheme to dispose of Eastern that was orchestrated at the highest possible echelons of the U.S. government and others. And we would like to continue our discussion about Flight 980 and George Jen's book, Final Destination Disaster, What Really Happened to Eastern Airlines. And to start off with, I'd like to read one excerpt from George's book. And I'm going to have Jill. Jill, would you read an excerpt that I thought that we would be able to discuss tonight and talk about?
I sure will, Neil.
Please?
Be happy to. The William Kelly was a director of the United States Peace Corps in Paraguay, and one of the Flight 980 victims. On January 6th, his wife of 16 years, Judith, received the official word that there were no survivors. First-time hints also began surfacing in the press, stating that the victims' bodies might not be recovered and that an official investigation might never take place. An attractive and intense woman, Judith decided to undertake a trek to the crash site. She later told me, "I felt a strong need to reconnect with Bill. I believed that seeing where this happened would help make the whole nightmare more real and might also bring some closure. I could detect from the rapidly emerging double talk that there would not be any official investigation, and this strengthened my resolve." She undertook steps to ensure she would succeed, first by reading a number of books on mountain climbing. Then in February of 1985, she embarked on an arduous 3-month daily workout routine consisting of aerobics, Nautilus machines, and hiking. Her final training came May 1985, when she participated in a grueling mountaineering course conducted on a frozen Alaskan glacier. Prior to departing for Bolivia, she met with Jack Young, the NTSB investigator in charge of the Flight 980 crash. In her words, "Mr. Young explained to me what little he purported to know. Basically, he told me I should forget about going, put all this behind me, and get on with my life. Perhaps you could say that to someone with a broken leg or arm, but not a broken heart." Because of their inaction, I felt I had no choice but to go. The one short meeting amounted to the full extent of the NTSB's assistance. Judith departed alone for Bolivia on June 19, 1985. While in La Paz, she gradually adapted her body to the high altitude, an important first step while continuing her daily workout routine. She also met with Bernardo Garacci, the guide she had hired. The mystery shrouded one first person to be dispatched to the crash site. However, when Juice attempted to question him about this trek, his only cryptic response was, "I recovered nothing of value." She let that go, something she had to do because she needed his assistance. A few days later, she and Agrachi, and I'm sorry for mispronouncing his name, conducted a one-day climb, practice climb, to a 17,400-foot elevation. She handled this with no problem, so they next conducted a four-day climb to the Hunana Potai Mountain with a peak of 19,950 feet, higher than the crash site. This allowed him to judge how she handled an altitude and topography comparable to where the jet had come to rest. She again did well, and after a three-day break, Judith Garacci and his assistant departed for the Mount Illimani ascent. They departed La Paz on July 2nd and reached the crash site on July 5th. On the climb, she continually pondered what they might find. Would there be any bodies? Would she recognize any of Bill's personal effects? Upon arrival, they found wreckage strewn everywhere. Although it was freezing cold, it was also sunny. The snowfalls had just begun covering some of the crash components with a dusting. Judith found herself shivering, not from the cold, but from pondering what had taken place in this horrendous place. Despite standing in the midst of the plainly visible devastation, in her soft voice, she read letters aloud to Bill that she had written, also reading others from friends and family. In her own words, this small goodbye gesture and homage was very emotionally draining, but did give me a sense of closure, even though I still have no idea of what caused the crash. I hesitated, finally burying the letters in the snow. While doing this, Garacci and his assistant photographed parts of the wreckage with my camera as they trekked around the mountainside and looked at the pieces of the carnage. It was clear that the crash represented something totally different to them than to me. I couldn't get Bill out of my mind, but they had never met him. They completed the climb and the descent in a total of 5 days. Upon her return to La Paz, now knowing exactly what the climb entailed and the many pieces of wreckage, including the tail section that she knew contained the flight and voice recorders, was still plainly visible and accessible. She spoke with Eastern Airlines, South American personnel, and the United States Embassy officials, conveying her fervent hope that the expedition would be mounted. But after the final optimism came frustration, as it became evident that such an expedition was not going to happen. She still wanted trained investigators to conduct an on-site probe, as she believed that an investigation at the least would recover the flight and voice recorders. She was telling anyone who would listen from Eastern and the United States government, "I made it. I, a woman on my own. Certainly the United States government and Eastern Airlines, with all your resources, can get up there and conduct a proper inquiry. I proved that it can be done." Whoever she spoke with seemed sympathetic, but there was never any follow-up. As a result, she flew home, clutching only still painful memories.
George, that must have been a very... you interviewed Miss Kelly, and it must have been a very emotional thing during that interview. George is with us tonight. George Jen, who was the author of this of the book that Jill just read a passage out of. George, your thoughts about that interview with Judith Kelly?
Yeah, sure, Neil. I met with Judith twice at Washington National Airport, and that's where, you know, I got all the information from her. This was several years after the crash, and obviously emotionally she was different than she probably was at the time that she went. It was very, very, it must have been very difficult. It was very difficult for her in two areas. The first was the reason there was no apparent good reason, no good reason at all for the National Transportation Safety Board to not to conduct a proper investigation and mount an expedition to at least recover the flight and voice recorders along with any bodies that might have been at the crash site. That I think was the most difficult part for her to comprehend. And as Jill didn't read, she subsequently did force the NTSB's hand by appearing on the Today Show and telling the entire world to hear what was just read in that book. And after that was when the first ALPA had decided, the Airline Pilots Association, to make the trek to recover the recorders. But then the NTSB decided, no, we'll do it. And by doing that, they took complete charge of the expedition. But for her personally, as I stated in the book, I'm sure that it was very emotionally draining and difficult for her to do what she did, but something that she felt she had to do.
Yeah. We also had last week, we had Stacy Greer. Stacy, are you with us tonight?
Yes.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. And can you tell us where you're calling from, Stacy? And we didn't talk to you very long last time, and hopefully we'll make up for it in this show, because you've got some news about what you're doing. And your dad was the second officer on Flight 980, a very handsome man. Would you tell us a little bit about that?
My brother actually found George's book, and, you know, he encouraged me to read it. I'm about halfway through it now, and after getting this far and then in the book and hearing the radio show last week, I decided to start a petition to have the crash site reopened, or whatever, the investigation reopened again, to see if, you know, it could get any farther than what it has.
Now, you were a little girl. You were a little girl when you lost your dad in this tragic crash. And how old were you at the time of 1985, January 1st? How old were you then, Stacy?
I was almost three. I would have turned three in February that year. He was a newborn. He must have been about maybe 10 or 11 months old, I think.
Uh-huh. And where are you living now, if you don't mind, Stacy? Where are you?
Right now I'm living in Fort Mitchell, Alabama. I don't know. It's Fort Benning. It's right behind Fort Benning, Columbus, Georgia, that area.
Okay.
Stacy, this is Steve Thompson. Do you have a head count on your petition drive up to this point?
Last time I checked, it was at 260. I need 100,000 signatures.
Great.
So,
now,
yeah,
how are we going to do that, Stacy? How do you think we're going to do that?
I have no idea. I don't know. I'm on social media, so I'm doing a lot of outreach on Facebook and Twitter. You know, my dad's cousin is kind of helping me out a little bit. They were really close.
Did your dad have brothers and sisters?
He did. He had, lots. He was the sixth child. one of six, not the six, but one of six. There's my Uncle Roy, George, Jared, and my Aunt Nina, and my Aunt Julie, and then, of course, my grandmother, his mom, Enza. So he had a big family, and
okay.
He's got lots of grandkids now.
That's the Bird family. Mark Bird is your dad, was your dad.
Yes.
And also in the crew was Captain Larry Campbell. And the first officer, George, I can't recall the first officer's name. Kenneth Rhodes, is that correct?
Yeah, Ken Rhodes, that's correct.
Okay, and he was an Air Force pilot as well as your dad, Stacy. Wasn't he in the Air Force or Navy?
No, he was on. He was a captain in the Air Force. He was a fighter pilot.
Okay.
The Air National Guard, one the 182nd Tactical Fighter Squadron.
Uh-huh.
That's what he was in.
Okay, and he hadn't been with Eastern very long when this happened.
Right. He got hired literally, I think it was maybe a month. It was way towards the end of 1984.
You know, 3 years old is a long time ago, and many years have passed in your life. And you know, I can't recall hardly anything that happened to me that was important, or anything, period, when I was 3 years old. Do you recall anything about what happened, or hearing your family talk about it?
Yeah, you know. This is going to get into the hard stuff, the memories. A lot of people think it's crazy when they, you know, for a three-year-old to have memories. But I do. I remember my dad. I've got several memories of him. He was always joking around. I remember one of the things he used to tell me to do was to shake my ruffles. That's kind of silly. But, you know, I was a daddy's girl, so... And I have those memories. And that as far as, like, anything that happened, like, if I remember, you know, the crash or anything, all I remember is, you know, that one day he didn't come home.
Well, we hope that we can do something to help with your petition and all of us here at the radio show. And listeners of a past broadcast about George's book makes many of us determined that we're going to do everything possible that we will get this once again where it should be done, a proper investigation of this tragedy. So that's one of our goals, the radio station's goals. So we'll
this
help.
Is Jim. Neil, I wonder if we can help Stacy. By going on a Facebook and telling people about what happened, what did not happen, and why the federal government has not responded, and ask for input from the world audience. I wish we could.
Well, George, George Jen has sent me two videos. And, George, I don't know whether you sent Stacy these or not.
No, I did not, Neil.
Okay, well, let me just mention these because I'm going to put them up on the website. If I can figure out how I can install a video, the two videos I think are very important to what you're going to do or you're doing, Stacy, and what we hope to do. And because there are similar tragedies. One is with Air New Zealand that crashed in the Antarctica. And the other one is the one that George just sent me today that I looked at, and it was a crash of Arrow Air. As you recall, 250 of our military heroes died on that flight. And these are videos that I think you should look at, and you'll see some similarities as to what went wrong during these investigations. And how a proper investigation should be conducted. What went wrong with the Eastern investigation, if you can call it an investigation.
Right.
So I want to just tell you that I hope that I can figure out a way of getting that video on the video page. We do have on our website a video page, and as well as Flight 980. I posted a page there on the menu bar on the home page that you'll see Flight 980. So we want your thoughts, and it's kind of a blog page, so you can enter whatever your thoughts are right there, and we'll carry it there and also try to post these two videos because I think they're well worth looking at. George, comments about the videos?
Yes, I can definitely forward them to Stacy so she doesn't have to log into in order to see them. You know, I think that the Air New Zealand crash was an example of they finally uncovered through, you know, formal hearings what had transpired in that particular case. But it took a lot of effort on the part of a lot of people in order to reopen the investigation after the probable cause of the crash had been laid at the feet of the pilot in command, and it turned out that that was not the case. But I think the Arrow Air case is more relevant to what may have transpired in Eastern Flight 980 because of the similarities and the lack of action on the part of the National Transportation Safety Board, the United States National Transportation Safety Board, which, by the way, was still headed up by Jim Burnett at the time, who was also the head of the NTSB at the time of the Eastern 980 crash. You know, at this point in time, it's 30 years after the Eastern crash. The Arrow Air crash occurred late in 1985, so it's almost 30 years. But the similarities are striking, and I'll just leave it at that for now. You know, and what obviously the ultimate goal that Stacy's trying to do would be to get a proper investigation opened up at this time on Eastern Flight 980 crash.
I'm going to open up some other microphones here that I see on my board. Our board is completely full. And those listening that want to make a comment, I'm going to open your microphone. So be very quiet now in the background because we pick up all sorts of noises. And so here we go. Maybe we'll have some further comments. Is this radio for you? Well, I think I've eliminated that one. Maybe I have. Hello? Hello?
I think you lost the whole show.
There's the guilty one. I just found it. I'm going to try opening it again. I've got two area code 305s. One, typically, let's see. Vito is at 954. Vito, are you with us tonight?
No.
Hey, okay, there you are. So I know it's not your noise, but we've got another noise at area code 305, but I've opened that microphone up as well because we want to hear from anyone that wants to make a comment what you've heard last week and what you're listening to now. So any questions from our listening audience that do have the privilege of a microphone in the form of your cell phone or your telephone?
Neil, this is Ray Valdez. Can you hear me?
Ray Valdez, yes. George, say hello to Ray.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Hey, George, fine. I tried to get a hold of you this afternoon to tell you I'd call in, but I guess you weren't home.
No, actually, I just got in a short time before the show.
Okay, Ray. What happened was I was going to go in right at the beginning, and believe it or not, a big, huge fuse blew in the post at my daughter's house. There was no current, so I had to go to a friend's house, and by that time it was after 7.
Oh.
Well, you're on now, Ray.
Ray, I'd like for you to Ray, I'd like for you to identify yourself again, Ray Valdez, and he's also in George's book. But what role did you play in George's book? Not play, but what happened, Ray? And tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, that particular trip, the 980 trip, was my flight, but it was over the holidays, and all the rest of the crew didn't want to fly it, so we typed 2'd off it, and, of course, the other pilots took it. I didn't know the pilots, but the flight attendants were very, very good friends of mine. And after the accident, Eastern just wanted to pay each one of the families $5,000, and I thought that was a crime. So what I did, without telling Eastern or anyone else, I called the head of the mountain climbing club in La Paz, and I put together an expedition. And they told me the equipment they needed, and I got it up in New York. And they actually got up there to the mountain. I gave them a video camera. They shot a video of the whole thing, and you can see the Eastern logo and everything. And then I did a short film, 15 minutes, with music, explanation, titles, and everything. And after that, when Frank Borman found out what I was done, he called me to his office, and he asked me, Ray, what are you going to do with the movie? And I said, well, I just want to use it to raise funds. And then he said, well, if they were well recompensed, what would you do? I said, I'd do nothing. About 5 days later, they called me from South America, and they said, you'll never guess, but they've offered us $500,000 to each one of the families. So I never did anything with the film.
Hey, Ray?
Yes?
This is Stacy. I'm a Mark's daughter. He was the second officer. Do you still have the video?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. George has it. A few people have it. Yes, I could send you a copy if you're interested. And it's in color. It's 15 minutes, and it has all the explanations and music. And I told the fellow that went up there and did the filming, he had to use a tripod. So it's very steady. It's a professional-looking movie.
That would mean so much to me and my family if we could see that.
Well, could you do me a favor? Unfortunately, I'm not home now, but if you send me an email with your address, I'll be glad to send you a copy of it.
Sure, definitely.
My email address is Ray Valdez, all one word, and that's spelled RayValdez at earthlink.net.
Okay, awesome.
George, wow. Did you?
That's fantastic.
Yeah, isn't it, though? Right here on our little radio show, Kitchen Table Radio. It's amazing.
Neil,
one of the strange things we found is absolutely no body parts and no blood, which was strange because at that altitude there were no animals, no footsteps of animals or anything.
That's what I was wanting to ask after reading George's book. I wanted to try to find you and ask you, why? What do you think? How can there not be any bodies? Because it sounded like it was still pretty visible.
I don't quite understand that, because we found all the maps on the back of the first and second officer and co-pilots, the ones that are in back of their seats. We found them complete. We found a lot of luggage complete.
Wow.
But I can't explain the blood particularly, or the body parts. I can't explain what could have happened. But we didn't find any. And there was a team of 4 that went up, and they stayed there, one whole day. And they came back the next day. So, and you'll see by the footage that they pretty well combed the whole area, and they used a special rod to push down into the snow to find, see if we could find parts. There were plenty of serpent skins that were on board that flight.
Mm-hmm.
You don't like to think about it, but don't you think that maybe animals may have foraged through and eaten the bodies. You have to think about it as much as you don't want to.
I would be surprised at that altitude that there's any animals roaming around.
Right, 19,000,
right, and
more than 19.
Yeah, it was 20,000 feet, and you could have seen at least footsteps of the animals, and there was absolutely nothing. And at 20,000 feet, I don't think there could be anything up there.
George, are you still on?
Yes, I'm here.
This is Chuck. I'm going to ask my little question. Your book, I think, and we've discussed it on the air before. You know, Eastern was involved, especially down in Miami, of being accused of carrying drugs, unbeknownst to the company, of course. And do you think that this flight could have been involved with that or some clandestine operation is why everybody at first just didn't want to get involved with it? What's your personal opinion?
Well, let me just state that, as I have placed in the book, Eastern captain by the name of Jerry Loeb had gone to and met with Frank Borman on one occasion and told him about the drug trafficking that was going on. So Eastern certainly knew about it. Okay, that's the first thing. It was in all the local newspapers down there. So it wasn't a complete surprise or a surprise at all to find out. In fact, I quoted the figures that I was able to obtain through the Freedom of Information Act as to the numbers of narcotics that were flown into the country on Eastern Airlines that were interdicted. That doesn't even take into account the amount that might have gotten through. And I'm sorry, what was the second part of your question?
Or could it possibly have been a clandestine operation going on? Maybe the plane was, for a better reason, crashed because of somebody flying on the airplane? Of something of that sort, or was carrying something besides drugs that was important to some group?
There was, as I have in the book, there was two possibilities in that area. The first one was that the aircraft was sabotaged because Ambassador Davis, who was at the time the United States ambassador to Paraguay, where the flight originated, was supposed to be on board the flight. However, he had canceled his reservation at the last moment, but his wife, Miriam Davis, was on board, and she was killed. The second part of that was supposedly the motive for the sabotage. This is all in a book, by the way, and that was one of the possibilities as far as sabotage went. Okay. In fact, that had been reported in the South American newspapers that was indeed what had happened, if the plane was sabotaged. But without the benefit of a in-depth examination of all the information and an NTSB investigation, we had no way of knowing whether the plane had in fact been sabotaged or whether it had been flown into the mountain.
You know, George, this is a reason everyone should see the video of Aero Air's crash with the military soldiers on board out of Gander. You talk, Chuck, you brought up, if there's something on board, you've got to, folks, you've got to watch that, and you can see that. When that was done by, I believe, ABC reporting. Linda Shear was a reporter. Hugh Downs and Barbara Walters were the host of that show. And so I recommend, and I'm going to put on the website, on the radio show's website, those two videos, the Air New Zealand, and very interesting videos. And Chuck, I'm glad you brought that up. I got a question for Ray. Ray, did you have a similar training and so forth when you did the trek up Mount Illimani as Miss Kelly did, Judith Kelly?
No, I did not go up the mountain. I don't think I could have really made it, particularly with the equipment and all that. So the head of the mountain climbing club and three of his helpers went up. I personally did not go up.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, Neil, that's also in the book. Ray financed the expedition up there.
Financed it, that's right, yeah. But, and the...
The pictures we took are the only real clear pictures of the whole thing. Because the ones they took right after the crash, you can't even make out what it's a picture of. All you see is a little black dot.
Now, these are the pictures that's in your book, right, George?
No, the pictures that are in my book came from Alan Gerber, who took them as part of the NTSB expedition that ultimately went over 10 months after the crash. But Ray is absolutely correct. The photos that I received with a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request from the National Transportation Safety Board, were black and white, and they were so blurry they were useless. Ray's video, though, which I have a copy of, is excellent. It's very clear, and why the NTSB, where the NTSB photos came from that were of such poor quality, I don't know. They might have been done via flyover. I don't know where they came from. There was no explanation when I received them where or how they were taken.
Okay.
I have a question for George. George, you mentioned in your book a man by the name of Roy Fitch from the United States State Department.
Yes, he was with the embassy in La Paz.
Okay. You said that you thought that maybe some information in the NTSB report indicated that it was possible that him as well as several other people went up there without anyone knowing. Do you think that maybe there could have been a group of people that went up and cleared some stuff out before anybody else could get up there?
Yeah.
Royce Fitch's name was mentioned not in the NTSB report. In fact, not in any information that the NTSB forwarded to me, but rather it was from a transcribed debriefing of the group that went on the NTSB expedition after they had returned. I believe it was either in a hotel there in La Paz or at the U.S. Embassy. The only reason I got that debriefing, that transcribed debriefing, was I received it from ALPA, despite having requested all the information from the NTSB. So in that transcribed debriefing, I had listed the names of the people who were present at that, and they were all either Americans with or Eastern personnel or Americans who are attached to the embassy in La Paz. And so somebody had stated in there without being identified, I believe the statement went, well, when I went up there in April, it was real good snow. And based upon the other participants, I came to the conclusion or the belief that it was Royce Fitch who had attempted to go up there along with a couple of other people in April. Again, this was another potential expedition that was never reported on. There were never any professional accident investigators involved. There was never any report of what they found, if anything, or if they even made it up there. So that just kind of added to the mystery, Stacy.
Right.
George, I can add something to that. When I contacted the head of the mountain climbing club, I did that right after the accident, and he had some friends that lived in the approaches to the mountain, and I told them to make sure they were aware of it and find out if anybody tried to get up there. We got up there in March, and he said no one had attempted to do that, and there were absolutely no footsteps nor nothing seemed to be touched or moved when the people got up there.
Right, that's correct, Ray. But this was the statement that was contained in the debriefing was that they had attempted it in April. After the petition.
That's after we got up there.
Yes, yeah. That's correct.
Let me ask, does anyone know if today someone wanted to make an expedition up the mountain, whether there's any restrictions? Is it seen off by the investigators of Bolivia? Is there any restrictions that a person couldn't do an expedition today? And if there have been any expeditions since the ones that we know of that have happened?
Actually, I found a news article. I'd have to pull it back up on my computer and read it again, but I think it was in, like, the New York Times or something that talked about in 2011, I think somebody went back up there again, and they mentioned Flight 980 as well as some other ones saying that the snow may start melting again.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I know there are companies that you can pay to take you up there.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's restricted at all.
Okay.
Neil, there was an expedition that went, I believe it was last year, that went up there and got the remains of a DC-6 that had crashed up there. And that was the first time that anyone had uncovered this previous accident. It was done, it happened prior to the Eastern 980. And they, in fact, found the bodies of the pilots that were still in their seats. If I find that article, it was a recent article in a newspaper, I'll send it along to you.
Okay, very good.
I have a question.
Neil is stuck again. My question is, if we've had these people go up there in the ensuing times after the crash, and we've been told that the tail was intact, why didn't they bring the black boxes down? Why didn't somebody bring them down? They're not hard to get out of the airplane.
Well, the NTSB expedition that went up there, they looked through the tail section. They could not find the black boxes, okay? They couldn't find the flight data recorder or the voice recorder. So I don't know, I don't know if anyone has been up there after that has made the attempt to recover them, because there's been nothing official that's ever been stated. And, it's been 30 years now. So to answer your question, I doubt if anyone has really been up there to look for them, or if there has been somebody who went up there and recovered them. We have no way of knowing.
Steve, that's part of that clandestine thing I was talking about.
Steve, you have a question?
Yes, I do. Does anybody have a report or an estimation on the snowpack that covers this site at this juncture?
You would think they would.
This is Ray. The only thing I can tell you, we went up there about 3 months after the crash, and nothing seemed to be covered much with snow, so there hadn't been much snowfall between January 1st and March. Very little snow.
I flew, and this is of no value, really, but I flew directly over the site within hundreds of feet some years after this, and of course I saw absolutely nothing, but that doesn't really mean anything. I thought everything is snowpack covered and will remain so for the duration.
Steve, that brings up a question to you. What were you doing that close to Mount Illimani?
Well, because I was VFR, and the sky was clear, and there was no radar, and I flew right. For some reason, I had an idea or an indication of exactly where the site was, and then I left the site and headed for the airport to land, and I went to 390 knots on downwind leg for landing at La Paz because I could.
Okay, you were an Eastern aircraft.
Yeah, a 727-500, yes.
Okay.
And don't report that, please.
No, this does go around the world, you know.
Now, this is Ray here again. Something you might want to note. About 5 months after our expedition, one of the flight attendants came up to the cockpit and said, there's some FAA people here. I said, oh, so I went back there. Well, it was their first expedition. And I found it strange that they had not contacted any one of us who had a successful expedition or anything. They just went up there, and, of course, they almost got killed on that one, a couple of people. But the FAA never contacted me, ever, which is kind of strange.
You're talking, Ray, you're speaking about the NTSB expedition, correct?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's correct. I said the FAA. Yes, the NTSB.
Yeah.
And they hadn't prepared at all. And to get to where the site was, you had to climb to 24,000 feet and then come down the saddle.
Ray, how many times did you fly that trip into Bolivia, La Paz, rather?
Oh, my gosh. I think it was for about 8 years.
8 years.
Quite a few times. Many, many times, I'd say.
Yeah. Did you know my good friend Tom Ender? Tom Ender.
I don't remember, but you know, the years go by. I'm 83, and God knows what I've forgotten.
Yeah, haven't we all?
I used to take my wife down on many of these trips because we had 3 days. We didn't do any flying. And we went to La Paz, and we spent, about 2 or 3 days there. I found it a fascinating city. Tough to breathe, but fascinating.
Yeah. Well, you know, these tragedies, there are so many lives that are affected, both those that lose their life and their families, but also those that could have been on flights that missed those flights, and this is one of them. And it must really, I don't know how I would feel. I had a good friend of mine, Hassan Calloway, that had a similar experience, and he got off a trip, and another person took it, and it was a flight out of Washington, and the airplane crashed, and he was everyone thought that he was the captain on that flight, and he related to me his experiences and his feelings about that.
It kind of sets you to thinking.
Yeah.
And sometimes even a change of underwear is required.
Yeah. And, matter of fact, I think that's what Hassan told me, pretty much so. We really need to get to closure on this flight, Fly 980, and by golly, if there's anything we can do here on the radio show, we're going to try to do it. And with Stacy's effort of petitioning those folks to send their names, and I've done it. It's very easy to do it. Could you tell us the mechanics of how to do this, Stacy? How to go online and get your name registered as a person that wants this reopened, Stacy?
What I did was I went to whitehouse.gov, and they have up on the menu, they have a link that says participate. And you click on that link, it takes you to where you can just open a petition. The first threshold is 150 signatures in order for it to be publicly searchable on the whitehouse.gov website. And then after that, it's 100,000 a month months later in order to be, you know, reopened or seen or whatever happens.
Okay, well, that's the way to do it, and we'll have more instructions on the website, EALRadioshow.com, and do everything possible to help you out here. And it looks like a monumental task of getting that many signatures, but with listeners like are listening tonight, and those that are on the air and just listening, because we have about 1,000 listeners every Monday, and plus or minus 10-20% the maximum. And we're heard, like Chuck or someone said, around the world, because we are in over 40 countries around the world that listen to perhaps not our live broadcast, but they listen to our archive broadcast. And you can pick up any of our 226 now broadcast. Is it 226? I think it is, yeah. Just by going to the radio show and clicking on the archives, or go to the blogtalkradio.com / Captain Eddie, CaptainEddie, Captain Eddie. Well, we have a few more things that we need to talk about. And Ray, I want to thank you very much for being with us tonight. You've added a lot to our show tonight.
Oh, thank you very much. And, you know, if I can do anything to help with the petitions or any information or anything like that, I'd be very glad to do it and even sponsor another expedition if that was necessary.
Wow. Neil, I have the link if you want me to read that to the petition.
Would you please? Let's read it a couple of times so people can go out and get their pencils or whatever. But I'm going to copy it down, too. Go ahead, Stacy.
It's wh.gov/I9SMI.
Say everything after the forward slash.
I9SMI.
Is that F like Frank?
No, I as in India, right?
Yes.
Okay. wh.gov/ I as in India, 9, or like niner, SML.
SMI. I as in India.
Okay, SMI. All right. Is there anything else to that address?
That's it. No, that's it.
And there we expect to see what when we go to that address?
It'll actually open up the petition. You can just go ahead and sign it with you. Just put in your email address, and then it sends you a confirmation email.
Hello. Yes. We do have another caller. Let's see if they want to say something besides hello. Okay. I hope I didn't make that caller mad. Well, thank you so much, Stacy, for you being with us tonight again. And we'll see if we can add a few more names to your list and do everything possible to see if we can reach that goal, and also to see if eventually we can reopen this, because we're not going to let this thing go here on the radio show. I did have...
Thank you, Stacy.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Yeah, Jim Hart. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Neil. For those of us who still have $150 on hand with you, I would like just to transfer that $150 to the new program that we're working on right now. Is that possible?
Well, yes, it is possible. Folks, what Jim has brought up here, and we were going to discuss it at a later show, but by golly, you just opened it up here, Jim. So to tell you what Jim is talking about is, you know, we've had, what, two or three failures now of trying to fly from Miami to San Juan. On first, we call it first flight, hoping to be the first flight of the new Eastern Airlines. And then second, we decided that, well, we couldn't do that one. And so let's see if we can do a Pioneer flight. And once again, we put a later date because Eastern didn't even have an airplane at the time we started our first idea. And then secondly, we couldn't get a schedule. And also the fact that Eastern had signed up to do a very charitable flight for the World War II veterans to go to Washington, D.C. So that was basically their first flight. And it was a great first flight for a very new airline to take our heroes of World War II to Washington. And so then I forgot what the third one was, but we couldn't make that. And so we've come up with another idea that we're going to kind of float this out and see if anyone is interested. So far, those that do know about what Jim just talked about have been very favorable about it. If we can't go to San Juan, then by golly, let's have a reunion in Miami and have a celebration of the new flight and also a celebration and a reunion for the former Eastern folks that have expressed interest in the new Eastern Airlines and a way to kind of christen the airline off to a good start. And they've been busy, by the way. We've gotten reports that they've got several charters, but Mr. Weigel, Ed Weigel, has come up with an idea that he likes the idea of a celebration in the Miami area, and we're looking at sometime in the late October of being able to meet down in Miami at one of the hotels. We're right now favoring the Marriott, where I used to love the layover, a lot of memories there. I told the gal I talked to today that I probably had some furniture there with my initials on it. And we're planning on a great celebration of the new Eastern Airlines. And so we want as many people to be at that celebration banquet dinner. It's going to be very reasonable with the pricing. And people from out of town wanting to come there, the hotel will offer a very special rate for two nights. Or if you want to just spend one night, it's up to you. Or if you don't want to spend a night at the Marriott, then go somewhere else. Days Inn is close by and so forth.
And a flight on the airplane, too.
Yeah, and a flight on the airplane. Yeah, that's – now, we're trying to get both airplanes if we put this out. But Ed has mentioned that he would get everyone on the airplane and take a trip from I don't know where, maybe up and down the coast of Florida. We haven't seen enough of that. Maybe over the Bahamas and then back, wherever. I remember Jim and I were on the DC-7 flight that left Opa-locka Airport, and we flew down as far as Key Largo and then back. And that cost me $125 as well as Jim and his wife. So
right.
It was worth being on a flight on a DC-7, the restored DC-7. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And so we're hoping to offer that at this celebration banquet, and it'll be the first reunion. And, Vito, we really would like to have your support and the EAR support, E-A-R-A, E-A-R-A, yeah, I got it right. And also the REPA group, Retired Eastern Pilots Association, the Silver Liners, any of the Silver Liners listening, we'd like to have your support. And know that you're welcome
Vito,
to come
Vito
down.
Vito is wanting to hop in there, Neil.
Okay, Vito, you got a suggestion? Go ahead.
Neil, if I could just intercept there 1 second. We're in the process of negotiating everything and setting it up. And as soon as we get the data as to cost, the date, and Neil's already been working on the hotel, then we're going to put an e-blast. And I know we're going to have an overwhelming response. It's only 148 seats. Neil has checks from about 70 people. If you want your checks returned, just shoot Neil an email with the email that I sent. But if not, we're going to wait like about 2 weeks to see what the actual cost is going to be of what Neil just described, and then we can apply that to that. But as of right now, We're at the preliminary stage. We're going to have all our ducks in a row, the date, the time, exactly what the cost is going to be. So we're all in organized, and then we're going to send a blast, and then we'll get the list going. The people that will be on the list are the ones that have already sent monies in, and then we'll add to the people as we get first come, first serve, if that's okay with Neil. Right, Neil?
That sounds good to me, Cecile. Jim Hart.
I have a suggestion, Neil.
Yes, Steve.
You know, you have something to say.
Oh, I said you have my full support on that. I was in discussion with Cecile about that. So when the time comes, we get the dates and everything else ready, we'll put out a blast on it.
So, right, you know, right, right, yeah.
Great,
And our special guest, Stacy and Ray, we hope that if you are in, if you don't have anything to do during that, we'd love to have you at our little, I don't know whether it's called a convention, a celebration, or a reunion, or what the heck, but we're going to use the words pioneer, the Eastern Pioneers, because we were the pioneers of Eastern Airlines. There's a new group now, and we'd like to invite them to come to our celebration. Before we leave tonight, I've got a letter I've got to read to you. I've just got to read to you because we had this young man on our he wasn't on our show. He sent me a letter. I read it on the air, and it was such a letter of love for Eastern Airlines because his family, all of his family were, I think, working for Eastern or had worked for Eastern, and he wrote me some real good news, and I want to read just a very short paragraph that he wrote today and sent it to me. And he said, "Good evening, everyone. I just wanted to update you all. I wrote a letter a while back that you read over the air about my experiences trying to get hired with Eastern, and I wanted to let you know that my perseverance paid off as I just graduated in the third class as a flight attendant for Eastern Airlines on July 17th, 2015.
Fantastic.
For me, my lifetime dream has come true. I finally earned my wings and am working for the best airline in the world, Eastern Airlines. Thank you all so much for your support and guidance. And I will be in touch in the near future with further updates on my career, my education at Embry-Riddle, and my wonderful life with Eastern Airlines and my Eastern family. I am truly very happy now. It took me over 27 years, but I finally earned my wings. Now to spread them and fly. My best to all of you. I will see you in the sky on Eastern Airlines. Sincerely, Eastern Airlines flight attendant Keith Mark Hardin, H-A-R-D-I-N-M-I-A. He's based in Miami. What a wonderful letter. And
very nice.
If you heard the letter we read over the air, it was a very emotional letter, and I had a hard time reading it, to tell you the truth. But he was determined that he was going to be an employee of Eastern Airlines. So he's earned his wings. And you might want to go to the website, EAL Radio Show, and see a picture of him there because he's just joined as a member of our radio show website, and his picture is up. And if you don't mind, just go to his, click on members, click on his name, and wish him well because he's going to be a great employee for Eastern Airlines. And with people like Mark, just as the people of the old Eastern Airlines and how dedicated and how we loved our company, he seems to have the same attitude.
I wonder if he had to learn Spanish. Remember, that was the predicament. Did he learn Spanish? Do we know?
Don't know. We need to ask him.
we'll have to email him and ask him. Oh, that's fantastic news. Great.
Isn't that great news? That really is. Any questions, sir? I think we're out of time. We've been out of time. We're on overtime now.
I'm waiting for that music.
it's so expensive being on the air, but we're on overtime. And, George, I was going to read a selection out of your book, but because of time, I'm going to hold off on that reading because we've talked about the half of your book. I don't know whether it's a half or a quarter or three quarters or one-fifth or whatever, about 980, Flight 980. And it needs our attention now. But the rest of the story in George's book is about the negotiations and what was involved in Eastern being sold. And so we want to bring out some of that information in George's book. It's a wonderful read, folks. You got to get his book. If you've ever read any Eastern books, you've not read the best book of all, and that's George Jenn's book, Final Destination Disaster, The Real Story of Eastern Airlines. And you can pick that up on Amazon.com. If you don't remember the title, I have a hard time saying it, but if you don't remember the title, go to Amazon and just type in George Jenn, J-E-H-N, and you'll find the two books that he has there now. And by the way, treat yourself to the first book that George put out, Flying Too Close to the Sun. It's a wonderful read. It should be a movie. I should star in it. And but they're both great books and very reasonable, and it's all about Eastern Airlines on the second book. And if you read the first book, Flying Too Close to the Sun, it's a novel. You'll be entertained all the way to the last chapter trying to figure out who done it. And about the last chapter, you will find out that your thoughts were wrong. And it's really a suspense, and it's all about the shuttle. He didn't say Eastern shuttle, but a shuttle flight. And it all involves the New York, the Boston area, and the Washington area. Great read, George. Beautiful work that you've done.
Well, thanks, Neil. But if you want to start it, you have to go through the Bruce Jenner operation. Sorry about that.
Well, I'm going to pipe in here right now.
Go ahead, Jill.
We also need to, you need to mention your book.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
I mean, it shows the love that people have for Eastern Airlines.
Yeah, there is another incidental book about Eastern Airlines.
Oh, you're being too kind. Now,
well,
we're gonna get you.
I've got two books. Vito, I'm not going to rule. I'm not going to go off air without telling about the book that you guys have. EARA has out also, and you've got a way to order in the newspaper, the EARA newspaper, The Wings of Man. I think that's the name of it.
That's right.
Okay, and so folks, go to the EARA Keeping in Touch newspaper. If you're not a member, fill out the application, join that organization. I don't know, it's the largest group of all of the organizations out there. And representing all of the departments of Eastern, and
9,000 strong.
There you go. I remember when it used to be 11,000 and 12,000, and that's when
right.
Vito was president,
right.
Right, Vito?
Yeah, it was 12,000. We're down to 9,200 now.
Yeah,
right.
But
so we're all getting older.
Yeah, there you go. And also, there's another book that's published, and yours truly was the person that compiled the stories that are in that book, and it's a takeoff of the theme that we used to have as an airline, the Wings of Man. Well, I just put a bracket at the end of man and put a Y in the bracket, so it's the Wings of Many, because the stories in that book are from many different people, from different departments of Eastern. And I think you'll really find it a good read. And So you might want to go to the website and check it out. It's not on Amazon.com. I haven't gotten that far yet, trying to figure out how to do it. George, I need to talk to you about how to get it out there and market it. But you can just go to our website and order it there on the website. And the address is there. Some people say that they're having a hard time buying it through PayPal. But I've talked to PayPal, and it works real fine. As a matter of fact, I got an order the other day that used PayPal, so they were able to purchase it through PayPal. If you don't have a PayPal account, you've got Visa, MasterCard, and American Express that you can charge it to. And it's only $14.95, and that's postage included, and I think you'll enjoy the book. It's very entertaining. Thank you, Jill, for reminding me.
You're quite welcome, Neil.
Now, any other questions before Jim Hart?
I'm here waiting for the music.
Panics about this music.
Great show, Neil, tonight on 980.
I think it was. Don't forget, Jim, before, well, you're going to mention it because we have the big bands coming up. We have a few minutes after hours. Go ahead, Jim. Take it over.
Yeah. Okay, folks, wow, there's that music again after a wonderful program. Where does the time go? That's our show for tonight, folks. We'll be back with you next week, same time, same station, www.ealradioshow.com. And like one of our popular Easter commercials, we have to earn our wings every day. And we hope we are doing just that as we bring you the EAL radio show. Next week, we hope we're doing, we hope you'll once again fly Eastern Radio. And we can bring you more Eastern news, history, and talk with former Eastern employees and friends of Eastern. Be sure to tune in and call in at 7 p.m. next Monday evening, when flight number 226 departs for the gate for a new adventure. Be on board for the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. Thank you, Alan Gerber and Mark Gerber, for being our guests on our show, giving us so much information about the traffic class of Eastern Flight 980. What you gave us was most revealing. From all the gang here at our studio and remote locations, we all say to all together now, good night, Eastern family. See you next week.
Good night, Eastern.
Good night, Eastern family.
Eastern family.
See you next week.
Thanks a lot, and we thank you also, Ray and Stacy, for being with us tonight. Now, stay tuned for that music that we used to all dance to, the big bands, and see if you can identify some beautiful music. We'll start off with Glenn Miller's orchestra. Kathleen Miller in the mood. Now here's from Benny Goodman. Saxophones back in those days, and the trumpets. Who could be better on trumpet than Harry James? Married to the beautiful Betty Grable. You may see love. Shaw could play any music of any songwriter, especially Cole Porter. Listen to this. And they begin to begin. Time we have tonight, folks. We'll see you back here for episode 227. Thanks for listening.